a commitment to end coal investment, to scale up clean power, to make a just transition.
Challenging coal and climate. It's Monday, November 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghans resettle, the heart of health in Pakistan, the business of reopening in Asia, aiming for the moon, artful postage. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The COP26 climate summit continues in Glasgow, Scotland, with coal, a primary fuel in large nations including China, India, and the United States, remaining the primary target of planet-warming carbon dioxide emissions. Britain, the host of the summit, says the end of coal is in sight, after dozens of countries pledged to stop using coal and end the financing of fossil fuels. But as Henry Ridgewell reports from the Glasgow summit, weaning economies off coal will not be easy, even for Britain itself.
Burning coal is the single biggest contributor to climate change. Over 40 countries made pledges at COP26 to phase out coal entirely by 2030 for rich countries and 2040 for poorer nations. Signatories include big coal consumers like Vietnam, Indonesia, Poland, and Ukraine. They, alongside several global banks and financial institutions, also committed to ending all investment in new coal power generation.
A commitment to end coal investment, to scale up clean power, to make a just transition, and phase out coal in the 2030s in major economies and in the 2040s elsewhere.
But many of the world's biggest coal consumers, including China, the United States, Australia, and India, did not sign the deal. Emissions of CO2, meanwhile, have almost rebounded to pre-pandemic levels.
Behind this, we see a rapid rise in the emissions in China, particularly pushed by probably economic stimulus packages.
Separately, 25 countries, including the United States, also pledged to stop public financing for all overseas fossil fuel projects by the end of next year. But again, key Asian coal investors, China, Japan, and South Korea, did not sign up. COP26 host Britain said the flurry of agreements shows the end of coal is in sight, but it still appears some way off. Britain itself is considering opening a new mine to produce coal for steelmaking. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has voiced opposition, but says it's a planning matter for local government. The local mayor supports the mine.
If we're going to have the green industrial revolution that we need in developing solar, wind, wave, and certainly here we'd love to develop more nuclear, it's all going to take significant amounts of steel.
Britain is also considering the development of a new oil field off Scotland's Shetland Islands, not far from Glasgow, host city of the climate summit. Meanwhile, the International Energy Agency said Thursday that if all the commitments made at COP26 so far were fully implemented, global warming would be limited to below 2 degrees Celsius, a significant improvement on the 2.7 degrees Celsius rise the United Nations forecasted before the summit. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Glasgow, Scotland.
More than 1,000 people demonstrated on Saturday in Australia's biggest cities of Sydney and Melbourne to protest the government's climate policies and strategies it offered at the COP26 summit in Glasgow. Some shared their concerns.
We are passionate about our children's future and ensuring that they have a safe future. And at the moment, our government is doing everything it can not to make that come to pass.
I care about the planet. I want a future for our generation. Yeah. Just simple, honestly. And it's great. It's great to see a big turnout. The COP26, you know, agreements were happening, and it's not turning out the best for Australia at the moment. So I think it's good to roll out here to show that we want more for our government.
Sydney's legal protest was the first after a months-long COVID-19 lockdown. Stay with VOA Asia coming up. Afghans resettle in the United States. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China spurs Taiwan anger with criminal liability threat for independent supporters. China ruling party plenary to further cement Xi's grip on power. Experts fear new Hong Kong doxing law will punish opposition. Fear stalks Rohingya refugee camps after murders. China trying to snuff murder mystery role-playing games. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more by visiting us at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and of course our website, that's voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. More than 50,000 Afghan refugees who are now housed at U.S. military bases are resettling throughout the United States in the coming months. The largest number will be heading for California and Texas. Mike O'Sullivan tells us the Afghan-American community and local officials are getting ready.
Afghan Americans in California protest what they call the Taliban government's repressive and cruel behavior during separate rallies in San Diego and Los Angeles in August and September. Now they're preparing for the arrival of Afghan refugees. One aid worker says the refugees are relieved to have fled a country led by the Taliban.
They're also very thankful that America was able to accept them, and then also that the MEMSA community, the Arab, Middle Eastern, Muslim, South Asian community, worked really hard to pool resources to help these individuals find housing, to help pay for basic necessities.
One Afghan-American who worked as an interpreter for U.S. forces resettled in the U.S. with a special immigrant visa in late 2012. He's helping to store supplies for newcomers, but also worries about Afghans left behind.
People are losing their lives. Taliban are searching. They are saying one thing, but doing another thing.
Saadet says dozens of his family members are living in fear in Afghanistan, including a brother who once worked for U.S. forces. Millions of Afghans have fled war in the country over the last 40 years. The UN Refugee Agency says 90% of those refugees now live in Iran and Pakistan. Saadet says the U.S. and its allies must help those who helped them and pressure the Taliban to respect human rights.
The solution should be that how should we make sure that the Taliban has a good government, a very inclusive government that represents all of the race and ethnicities in Afghanistan, not just from one tribe, not just from one political party.
California will receive more than 5,000 Afghan refugees in the first group. Some communities are asking for federal help and for locals to step up too.
All these folks need placement, and it makes sense that they're placed with people that speak the same language that can help them immigrate.
Afghan Americans are not optimistic about the future of their homeland, but still hope for change.
We want to see an Afghanistan that is free, an Afghanistan that is peaceful, an Afghanistan that believes in human rights for all people.
In the meantime, tens of thousands of Afghan refugees will join others who have built a better life in America. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
In Japan, an unusual name has made a racehorse a social media sensation. Sumomomomomomomo. That's Sue with 8 mo's after it. Feel free to practice it at home. You'll do better than I did, I'm sure. But the person who had to quickly master the name, and no doubt has done it better than all of us, was the track announcer, as the horse burst out of the pack to win the race. Sumomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomomom Stay with us on VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, Indonesia's main island of Java is cleaning up after flash floods from torrential rains killed at least six people and three others were missing. authorities said 15 people were swept away, six later rescued in East Java province. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's great to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. According to the Pakistani government, over 45,000 angioplasty operations are conducted in Pakistan each year. That's an operation in which a small mesh tube is inserted into a blocked artery to allow blood to flow through it. Up until recently, Pakistan had to import these medical devices, but now they're being manufactured in the country. VOA's Asim Ali Rana has the report. It's narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
This piece is called a stent and is an intricate medical device used to perform angioplasty operations to open blocked arteries for better blood circulation in heart patients. Previously, Pakistan imported nearly 150,000 stents per year, but National University of Science and Technology in Islamabad began developing its own stents last year. The stents manufactured in Pakistan, according to Dr. Murtaza Najabat Ali, CEO of Innovative Health Technologies, are of world-class quality.
When we set up stent production facilities here, European inspectors came and did a very extensive inspection, and then they certified it. After that, Drug Regulatory Authority of Pakistan inspectors came, and they inspected for quality, procedure, and standards, after which they gave us our manufacturing license.
According to the university website, Pakistan is the world's 18th country to manufacture stents. After being manufactured in Pakistan, the first stents were tested in Germany and later in Poland. Additional tests were conducted at Rawalpindi Institute of Cardiology and Karachi's National Institute of Cardiovascular Diseases.
In the trial phase, we used the stents in 20 to 30 patients, and we wanted to see if the stents would be inserted smoothly without any problems, whether it would reach where the blockages were or not. We had really great results. We looked at the patients 10 months later, and apart from one patient, all of the blockages were unblocked.
While the National University of Science and Technology manufactures bare metal and drug-eluted stents, the university also makes catheter balloons for angiography. Dr. Ali says their devices will bring down the cost of heart surgeries.
Bare metal stents, which are non-medicated, used to start at around 50,000 Pakistani rupees, or roughly $300, and would go up to $410 or $450. While you can find a decent one nowadays for roughly $125 or so, we will launch ours for roughly $90.
Pakistan presently has the ability to produce 15,000 stents per year, not enough to completely meet demand, but the capacity is expected to increase in the future. For Asim Ali Rana in Islamabad, Pakistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Find this and all of our stories on VOA Asia Twitter.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea's conservative former top prosecutor won the main opposition party's hotly contested nomination for next March's presidential election. Yoon Suk-yeol has called for a stronger U.S. security guarantee to neutralize North Korean nuclear threats. You'll find this in all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We have more VOA Asia. Reopening to visitors and converting corn to cannabis are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascao.
Hotels, street food carts, and tuk-tuks are gearing up for the return of tourists to Bangkok as Thailand prepares to reopen to fully vaccinated visitors after 18 months of COVID travel curbs. But industry experts say the steamy metropolis, the world's most visited city before the pandemic, will take some time to get back to its pulsating, intoxicating old self. The coronavirus pandemic sent visitor numbers plummeting from 40 million in 2019 to just 73,000 in the first 8 months of 2021, leaving its tourism-resilient economy registering its worst performance in over two decades. Tourism accounts for a fifth of the Thai economy. Authorities are desperate to revive the sector, despite Thailand still recording about 10,000 COVID infections a day and the vaccination rate lagging at about 40%. For Phan, an owner of a surfboard rental business, tourists can't come back soon enough.
I cannot predict whether the reopening will be 100% or just 50 to 60% successful. But if the number of tourists goes back to at least 40 to 50%, it's better than the status quo.
Introduced in July as a first step towards normalcy, a scheme to make it easier to visit the southern holiday island of Phuket drew only a few tens of thousands of people, which was like a drop in the ocean. Afghanistan's new Taliban authorities swear they plan to crack down on the illicit drugs trade that largely fueled their successful revolt. But so far, nothing has changed for cannabis farmers like Ghulam Ali, whose crop stands head height across 3 hectares, which is 8 acres of land outside Kandahar. His plantation lies on the main road through the Panjwai district, northeast of the city, its dark green plants as recognizable as the acrid smell.
Under the previous government, there was no ban on hashish cultivation. The government let us grow, but they took a levy of 3,000 rupees a kilo. The Taliban didn't tell us anything about this. They didn't ask us to stop growing hashish.
3,000 rupees is about 17 US dollars. Ali's family converted maize fields to cannabis in 2000, just before the end of the previous Taliban regime, and have had no cause to regret it. Some 20 relatives live in his mud brick farmstead. They're not wealthy, but the children go to school and life is comfortable by rural Afghan standards. Next month, the plants will be sifted, pressed, and heated to extract an oil, which is then transformed into black-green hashish paste for sale and export. All this despite the Taliban, once a shadow army in the region and now the local administration, formally opposing the drugs trade. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
Now that you've heard Business Scene, see it on VOA Asia YouTube. Making headlines in Asia, Japan's Defense Minister Nobu Kishi inspected the German frigate, the Bayern, in Tokyo. It is the first German warship to visit Japan in about 20 years. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, an Earth flight giant contributes to NASA's upcoming moon missions, plus words from the next crew to visit the International Space Station, and grim news from NASA about the future of food on Earth. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
An animation shows the Orion spacecraft and the service module propelling it leaving Earth and traveling near the moon. It is a computer simulation of NASA's Artemis 1 uncrewed mission. NASA plans to follow the real Artemis 1 with a second mission carrying 4 astronauts who will circle the moon. It's all a precursor to the big mission, Artemis 3, where NASA aims to put the first woman and next man on the lunar surface. But none of this would be possible without NASA's partnership with the European Space Agency and its 650 million euro contract with Airbus, the plane manufacturer building the service modules.
The service module is really key for the Orion vehicle and for NASA achieving the Artemis mission. So this has been going very well with NASA. We are very pleased with the outcome. And this is paving the way for continued cooperation for the years to come.
The NASA-ESA collaboration also means European astronauts will ride aboard Artemis missions. Artemis 1 is scheduled for early 2022, and if all goes according to plan, Artemis 3 is slated for 2024. In other news, what's officially been called a minor medical issue again delayed the ISS-bound launch of SpaceX Crew 3. NASA didn't name the crew member, but says the medical issue is neither an emergency nor related to COVID. Originally set for Halloween, that's October 31st, the four-person crew includes two astronauts NASA selected for its Artemis program.
Those iconic pictures from the Apollo mission, you know, Earth rise from the moon and things like that. And trying to imagine just standing there in a spacesuit looking back at planet Earth, this kind of blows your mind. I think for most of us, we channel that energy into excitement that it could actually be possible for us to return to the moon and return to stay.
The crew will now launch no sooner than November 6th. Finally, against the backdrop of the UN Climate Change Conference, NASA researchers published a study that says climate change will wreak havoc on Earth's crops by the end of the decade. Scientists say they used a supercomputer to grow virtual crops and study them decade by decade. They found staples like wheat and soybeans would suffer, with corn showing a 24% drop by the end of the century. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Stamp collectors are always looking for colorful and enticing designs to fill their albums, but the stories behind their stamps can be years in the making. Antonio Alcala has spent over a decade creating a single postage stamp. He is one of only four art directors that oversees stamp design at the U.S. Postal Service. Maxim Moskalkov spoke with Alcala about how a stamp is created.
It took art director of the USPS Stamp Services, Antonio Alcala, 10 years to create one stamp dedicated to hip-hop. The reasons?
I think I hired at least two different artists where it didn't work, and then I took the assignment on for myself and worked with a photographer, and then we came up with a design, and that was approved, or we liked the way it looked, and then somewhere up along the hierarchy, it was rejected, and so I had to start again, but using the same basic materials with a photographer.
In the end, the hip-hop stamps included one of four hip-hop genres, including rap, breakdance, graffiti, and DJing. Alcala is one of only four art directors overseeing stamp design at the U.S. Postal Service. He's worked on a range of stamps.
There was one I did for the Emancipation Proclamation, which I'm celebrating its 150th anniversary.
He says stamp design is a complicated process where often hundreds of sketches are rejected before one design is chosen and approved.
As an art director, I'm usually working on multiple stamps at the same time, and they may be at different stages of the process, either just beginning or wrapping it up or just doing the final little details on it.
Alcala's 2012 Waves of Color became the first stamp series in the U.S. Postal Service history to have a fully abstract design.
So these were high, they call them high denomination, high value stamps. It's printed in a very complex way so that these have like, I forget, I think 8 or 10 different colors making up those different lines.
The U.S. Congress provides only about 1% of financing for the Postal Service, so USPS's budget largely depends on its sales and paid services. And that makes the job of USPS Stamp Service Director Bill Geeker extremely important.
And what happens is the United States population actually sends in around 30,000 suggestions a year for stamps. So what my office does is we sort through those, we respond to everything we get in.
And then it's up to art directors like Alcala to decide what to proceed with. The challenge is his canvas is only roughly 2 by 2 centimeters. A very tiny space to portray something people will want to use on their letters, bringing important news, love, and care around the United States and beyond. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
No postage necessary to hear our program. All you have to do is follow us at VOA Asia on Facebook and at our website, voanews.com, where you can hear all of our full-length 25-minute programs. Follow us as well on Twitter and Instagram. VOA Asia is brought to you by our great team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Cascao, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow. Have a great day. Be safe and be well.